Well, brethren, it's almost over again, the days of unleavened bread. And I'm sure that during these past few days, we've all put forth an extra hard effort at getting sin out of our life. And we've been reminded also how important it is not only to get sin out of our life, but to put Christ in place of those sins. And by putting Christ into our life, we're putting His way of life into ourselves. And that's what I want to talk about today, not only putting leavening out, but putting unleavened bread in the form of right principles, right living, things to do that are the opposite of sin. Now, a few years ago, believe it or not, it's been a few years, I shared with you a rather in-depth analysis of the oath of the Boy Scouts of America. We went through that little oath or promise in detail, and I began by telling you the story of how the Boy Scout movement got started in this country and how much influence that I believe the Scout movement had on the development and growth of our country. I really believe that that program was inspired by God to bring up a generation, and more than one generation, of loyal, devoted, good people to help lead this country to the height of its greatness. If you remember, I told in that particular message about how Mr. William D. Boyce made a business trip to London in 1910 and had a chance meeting with the founder of the Boy Scouts of England, Lord Robert Baden-Powell. Mr. Boyce had not heard of scouting before that because it was only begun a couple of years before that in England. But he met Lord Baden-Powell, and he was very impressed with what he heard, and he came back to the United States and met with some other pioneer scouters, and they literally began the Boy Scouts of America by chartering it on February 8, 1910. Now, that may sound like mere happenchance that he wound up meeting with Lord Baden-Powell at that particular time and bringing that movement back and getting it started in America and it growing and mushrooming like it did. But I don't think it was happenchance. Just don't believe it was a mere coincidence. As a matter of fact, I can't help but wonder if Almighty God didn't intervene directly in the formation and development of that organization to bring this country to its height that it eventually did. And here's why I believe that's true. As you will see shortly, the underlying fundamentals of scouting were in total accord with the Scriptures and with our understanding of God's will regarding right living. They are precepts that we should understand and incorporate into our own lives as Christians. When the Boy Scouts of America came into being, our nation was just beginning. Some say we were just arriving as a nation. We had just concluded the Spanish-American War, where we certainly asserted our authority, and we began to grow and develop about that time at a rapid rate. But to maintain that growth and development, we had to have the right kind of leadership in politics and business and industry in the future, not just at that time, but in the future. And to accomplish this, it was necessary to instill proper virtues and leadership qualities in our future leaders while they were still boys. And that's where the scouting movement came into play. Through it, thousands of young men were taught bravery, honesty, integrity, and service to others. I'd like to give you an example in the form of Captain Colin P. Kelly, Jr. Captain Kelly was a former scout, a former Eagle Scout, as a matter of fact, which is the highest rank awarded in scouting. He became a pilot for the United States just before World War II, and he flew a B-17 Flying Fortress on bombing runs against the Japanese Navy shortly after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. He is remembered as one of the first American heroes of the war, of World War II, for sacrificing his own life to save his crew when his plane became the first American B-17 to be shot down in combat. President Roosevelt wrote a letter directed to the President of the United States in 1956. In that letter, he requested that president further honor Captain Kelly by appointing his son, Colin P. Kelly III, to West Point Military Academy. President Eisenhower honored that request by agreeing to appoint young Mr. Kelly III to West Point. But Mr. Kelly III, also an Eagle Scout by this time, declined that appointment. Respectfully, he said he wanted to earn appointment to the academy by regular competition, not by being given a special favor. To me, exemplifying the kind of thinking that one would expect from an Eagle Scout. Father and son, both scouts, living up to the ideals of scouting. The lives of many other young boys or young men have been positively influenced by scouting. Former scouts have become president of the United States, governors, senators, representatives, members of the Supreme Court, university presidents, and held high positions in the armed forces. They've been astronauts and leaders in business and industry and agriculture, as well as notable artists, authors, and explorers. Brethren, the influence of the Boy Scout movement was definitely a significant factor in the development of our country into the greatest nation on the face of the earth. It got to be that because of the people who made it up. Many of the leaders in this process were the way they were because of having instilled in them the principles of the Boy Scouts of America. You probably already know the Boy Scout motto, be prepared, and perhaps the Boy Scout slogan of do a good turn daily. And perhaps you remember the special wording of that Boy Scout oath that I alluded to earlier. It is a special creed that any person of any age or any sex would do well to live up to. It goes like this. On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country, to obey the scout law, to help other people at all times, to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. Thousands of boys over the past 100+ years have pledged that oath upon becoming a Boy Scout. And many of them went on to honor that pledge for the rest of their lives. As part of that promise, as it's sometimes called, the scout agrees to, quote, obey the scout law. Today, as I mentioned earlier, we are concluding a 7-day period of training in character, a period in which we've really concentrated on putting sin out of our life. But again, if we're not careful now that these days are over and we're thinking back to other things and not concentrating as intently as we have been, it's going to be so easy to let down unless we replace what we put out with something positive, with good thoughts, good principles, good standards. Today, I'd like to share with you the 12 points of the law of the Boy Scouts of America. And I think as we cover each of them, it should be very clear to us that these principles are indeed Christian principles, ones which are supported by numerous scriptures and ones which we should definitely want to live up to ourselves as best we possibly can. We begin with the first point. A scout is trustworthy. There are 12 of these points, and for each one, the Boy Scout Handbook lists the point and then a very brief description of what that point means. And I will simply be reading those brief descriptions from the Boy Scout Handbook. The first one, a scout is trustworthy. A scout's honor is to be trusted. If he were to violate his honor by telling a lie or by cheating or by not doing exactly a given task, when trusted on his honor, he may be directed to hand over his scout badge. In other words, if he's found to be untrustworthy, he can no longer be a part of the Boy Scouts. As a matter of fact, being trustworthy is such an integral part and concept in the scouting movement that sometimes when a person really wants to express his sincerity in making a promise, he may say, "Scout's honor." And that's what that means. If you do it on Scout's honor, you are pledging your trustworthiness. And as I said earlier, we will find scriptures to back up each of these concepts. Many lessons about trustworthiness, for example, can be found in the Bible. And probably the most familiar one to all of us is that of Abraham. God entrusted him with certain things, and Abraham certainly proved himself to be trustworthy. We won't go into all the details right now. You know them well. But God made a deal with Abraham, and Abraham kept his word. He did what God told him to do and what he agreed that he would do. And God kept his word to Abraham. Both he and Abraham were trustworthy. Abraham had so much trust and faith in God that he was willing to kill his own son. Having enough trust in God to accept that that was what needed to be done. God said so, and that was good enough for him. And he believed that with all of his heart that God would resurrect his son if that became necessary. But you might say, in other words, that Abraham trusted in God's trustworthiness. And likewise, God proved that Abraham was also trustworthy. Let's turn to Genesis 26, verses 3 through 5. Genesis chapter 26, beginning in verse 3, where God is speaking to Abraham and says, "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father." I'm sorry, I said this was to Abraham, but it was to Isaac instead. "I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Abraham, in other words, was certainly trustworthy. Joseph was another example of a person who was truly trustworthy. He was given the position of second in command in the kingdom of Egypt because he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. He was given the position for that reason, but he retained that position because he was trustworthy and effective. Now, on the other hand, the nation of Israel was not trustworthy. You remember, of course, the situation with the golden calf. They proved that God could not trust them even for a short period of time. And after a number of years of God providing them with everything from food and water to shoes and clothes that wouldn't wear out, they did not trust him enough to move on into the land he had brought them to. But Joshua and Caleb, however, gave a true report when they, with the other spies or scouts, scouted out the land. They gave a true report and proved that they were trustworthy. And what did God do to honor that trustworthiness? He permitted them, and only them of that entire group, to enter into the promised land. God places a tremendous trust in each one of us, and trustworthiness is very important to him. Remember, I mentioned it from reading from the book, that if a scout fails in this point, he forfeits his badge. He gives up membership in the organization. And the same is true for us in the church. If we are proven not to be trustworthy, then we may have to give up our badge as well and no longer have a part or be put out of God's organization. The second point is loyal. A scout is loyal. A scout is loyal. He is loyal to all whom loyalty is due. His scout leader, his home and parents and country. Theodore Roosevelt had a lot to say. He had a lot to say, period. I did not realize until recently that he wrote a number of books. He was an avid reader and a speed reader, and he read virtually everything that he could obtain all through his life. But he also wrote some famous things, some good things. And I'd like to read to you just a couple of paragraphs from one of his writings regarding loyalty or being loyal. This is what he says. The very last thing that an intelligent and respecting member of a democratic community should do is to reward any public man because that public man says he will get the private citizen something to which this private citizen is not entitled. You ever heard of anything like that? Perhaps in the past 8 years? Or will gratify some emotion or animosity which this private citizen ought not to possess. For example, because maybe he didn't earn it. Let me illustrate this by one anecdote from my own experience. A number of years ago, I was engaged in cattle ranching on the Great Plains of the Western United States. There were no fences. The cattle wandered free, the ownership of each being determined by the brand. The calves were branded with the brand of the cows they followed. If on the roundup an animal was passed by, the following year it would appear as an unbranded yearling and was then called a maverick. By the custom of the country, these mavericks were branded with the brand of the man on whose range they were found, where they belonged. One day I was riding the range with a newly hired cowboy, and we came upon a maverick. We roped and threw it. Then we built a little fire, took out a cinch ring, heated it at the fire, and the cowboy started to put on the brand. I said to him, "It's so-and-so's brand," naming the man on whose range we happened to be. He answered, "That's all right, boss. I know my business." In another moment, I said to him, "Hold on, you are putting on my brand." To which he answered, "That's all right, I always put on the boss's brand." I answered, "Oh, very well, now, you go straight back to the ranch and get what is owing to you. I don't need you any longer." He jumped up and said, "Why, what's the matter? I was putting on your brand." And I answered, "Yes, my friend, and if you will steal for me, you will steal from me." I think old T.R. had a pretty good understanding of the meaning of loyalty. Loyalty may be defined as the quality of being faithful, true, and constant. Deuteronomy 7:9 shows us how loyal God is to us. We can count on Him to fulfill His promises. Deuteronomy 7 and verse 9, "Therefore know that the Lord your God, He is God, the faithful God, who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations with those who love Him and keep His commandments." We definitely can count on God to keep, to fulfill His promises. Can He equally count on us? When we were baptized, we made a promise to God that we would devote our life to serving Him and obeying Him to the very best of our ability. Have we kept that promise? Or have we let down? Well, we have tried, but unfortunately we have all fallen short. Passover was an opportunity for us to reaffirm that promise, and we, each of us, did at that time. But we also need to reaffirm it daily. Living in the circumstances that we do, and the surroundings that we're in, and the influences that we have to be faced with every day, we literally need to think about our commitment to God, about the covenant that we made with Him, and to renew that covenant, literally, and especially in our minds, every single day of our life. Fulfilling that promise is what we mean by true loyalty. Jeremiah 48:10 calls for a curse upon anyone who is lax in doing the Lord's work. And let's look at Matthew 24, verse 11 through 13. Matthew chapter 24, beginning in verse 11. "Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved." That's a promise. That's a covenant. If we endure to the end, we shall be saved. This verse says that only, by implication, that only those who endure to the end will be saved. That's how important it is to be loyal to God. But how important is it to us? Well, since our eternal life depends upon it, that makes it very important indeed. Brethren, Christ promised that we would be persecuted. So we can count on that. You can know that you're going to be persecuted. If you haven't already, it's coming. But no matter how bad things get, let's resolve to be loyal to God and to His work and to each other. The third point, a scout is helpful. A scout is helpful. He must be prepared at any time to save life, help injured persons, and share the home duties. He must do at least one good turn to somebody every day. You know, since the beginning of scouting in this country in 1910, boys have demonstrated what it means to be helpful, Boy Scouts. Scouts helped out in devastating floods in Ohio in 1913, in the hurricanes in Florida in 1926, and New England in 1938, and numerous other floods in other states with their boating and life-saving skills. During World War I, Scouts sold $400 million in Liberty Bonds, $43 million in war savings stamps, They collected 20,000 board feet of black walnut timber for gun stocks and airplane propellers, and over 100 train car loads of fruit pits, that's peach seeds, used in the manufacture of gas masks. They also grew 12,000 war gardens. Hopefully, I don't think any of us are probably old enough to remember war gardens, but at one time that was a big thing, and a significant way to make a contribution to the war effort was by growing your own little family plot of a garden wherever you could find room to do so. And scouts certainly pitched in to be helpful in that respect. And they also distributed 30 million pieces of government literature. They also performed numerous good turns on a national scale during World War II and since. And many scouts have performed the ultimate act of being helpful, saving a life. When this is done at the risk of his own life, the scout is awarded the National Medal of Honor. Christ himself was an excellent example of help being helpful to others. He healed the sick, he cast out demons, and even turned water into wine at one point to be helpful, because that was what was needed at that place in that time. And he gave us some specific examples and detailed instructions about being helpful. Let's look at some in Matthew 25. Verse 35 through 40. Beginning in verse 35. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. If you are physically able, actively performing public acts of services, especially like with nonprofit organizations, is one way of effectively being a light to the world. That can be very rewarding in this life, but just think about how rewarding it's going to be being helpful to others in the world tomorrow. The fourth point, a scout is friendly. And this is one of my favorites. A scout is friendly. He is a friend to all and a brother to every other scout. On a not too long ago visit to our area here, some of you recall Mr. Kennebec came down for a visit and delivered a couple of messages. Mr. Kennebec remarked about how friendly everyone was in this congregation, and how welcome he was made to feel while he was here. Now, I'm sure we all have experienced that friendliness whenever we visited other congregations in other areas. The same is true about Boy Scouts and their leaders. One example of this Boy Scout friendliness kind of stands out in my mind from the mid-1970s. We were attending church in Atlanta. I think Mr. Charles Brooks was there at that time. And I was given the honor and the privilege and permission to organize a Boy Scout troop in the church in that congregation in Atlanta. So we got started, and after several hikes and about 5 campouts, as I recall, and the canoe trip, it came summer camp time. And our troop of a dozen or so boys went to summer camp, where we met up with a number of other troops of various sizes and the staff, and we had a wonderful time. None of my boys, I say my boys, had any summer camp experience. Not a one of them had ever been to a summer camp. They were kind of new at this thing. But they were scouts. They were friendly. And they kind of made a hit because at the end of the week that we were at the camp, the staff approached our boys and selected three of them that they asked to become members of the staff on the spot, which they did and worked the rest of the summer. And that's an example of what can happen when a scout is friendly. And, of course, hopefully showing the other characteristics of a scout, keeping the scout law. I was also impressed with the adult staff at that camp that time because we let them know up front about our dietary requirements so there wouldn't be any problems. To them, that was no problem at all. They were literally glad to accommodate us. You could tell the way they reacted and the special effort they went to provide us with what we required, that they appreciated the opportunity to do that service on our behalf. That was very impressive. We even had one breakfast meeting of adults sometime during the camp, and my sister scoutmaster and I agreed that we would just skip that meeting because, you know, if you're going to breakfast, you're going to be getting ham, bacon, sausage. We didn't want there to be a problem, so we just skipped that meeting. Later on that day, some of them saw us and asked us where we were, and we, you know, kind of made excuses. So, well, we wish you'd come. We had a special breakfast prepared for y'all that met your requirements. So, again, they bent over backwards. They were helpful and friendly. Let's look again at the scripture about letting our light shine, because that's certainly what we're talking about when we talk about a scout being friendly. Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Do you ever think about this particular verse as a commandment? We're literally told in this verse to have good works that others can see. God doesn't want us to just be an entity within ourselves and live according to His words, His laws, and in that respect, He literally wants us to be lights, to shine, to show forth things like helpfulness and friendliness and courtesy, which we'll talk about in just a minute. How could you possibly let your light shine effectively without being friendly? I mean friendly to everybody. You can be. It doesn't hurt anything, and I've never heard anybody complain about it. In John 15, verse 14 through 17, Jesus paid the disciples a high compliment by calling them friends. You can be assured He will also call us friends as well if we obey Him. A true friend is a very valuable thing indeed. And naturally, we would expect our best friends would be fellow church members. Shakespeare said, "Those friends thou hast, grapple them to thy soul with hoops of steel." Pretty good advice, even if it is poetic. Shouldn't we follow this advice with every member that we know in God's church? The next point is courteous. A scout is courteous. He is polite to all, especially to women, children, old people, and the weak and helpless. He must not take pay for being helpful or courteous. Seems you don't hear much about courtesy these days. Not like it used to be. I'm afraid that that means that it's not as important as it once was. But it should be. The Apostle Paul thought it should be. He said in Titus 3:2 in the English Standard Version, to speak evil of no one, to avoid quarreling, to be gentle, and to show perfect courtesy toward all people. Peter also stressed the importance of being courteous in 1 Peter 3:8, where he said, finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one with another. Love as brethren. Be tender-hearted. Be courteous. So the Scripture, again, insists upon our being courteous, showing courtesy. You know, in the old days, you could get a pretty good indication of whether a boy was a Boy Scout or not by the courtesy that he showed. Now, expressions of courtesy. Might not the same thing be said about a Christian? In olden days, if you saw a boy helping a little old lady across the street, whether she wanted to go across the street or not, you could be pretty assured that that was a Boy Scout. That's kind of how they were known, for being helpful and courteous. Courtesy involves good manners, things like saying yes, sir, and no, ma'am, opening or holding the door for someone, and for a man, standing up when a lady approaches him at a table where he's sitting. Such things are still noticed. Don't hear much about it anymore, but it's still noticed, and in many cases, appreciated. And remember, courtesy is contagious. You've heard that, I'm sure. The next point, a scout is kind. He is a friend to animals. He will not kill nor hurt any living creature needlessly, but will strive to save and protect all harmless life. And it's interesting to me that the description there just talks about him, a scout, being kind to animals, but a scout is kind to people as well. I don't know why that's not included as part of that, but nonetheless, I was surprised to find out how many times the word kind is used in the Scriptures, kind or kindly and so forth. For example, Ephesians 4:32 says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ God forgave you. And 1 Corinthians 13:4 says, love is patient, love is kind. In 2 Chronicles 10, verse 7, they replied, if you will be kind to these people and please them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants. And I think that's pretty much true in any relationship. If you be kind to somebody, they appreciate it. It's the kind of thing you just can't help but appreciate kindness when you're being shown kindness. And in Acts 28:2, Paul praised the people of Malta for their kindness. Nehemiah praised God for his kindness. Let's look at that one in Nehemiah 9, verses 13 through 17. Nehemiah chapter 9, beginning in verse 13. You came down also on Mount Sinai. Again, this is Nehemiah praising, speaking to God. And spoke with them from heaven, and gave them just ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments. You made known to them your holy Sabbath, and commanded them precepts, statutes, and laws by the hand of Moses, your servant. You gave them bread from heaven for their hunger, and brought them water out of the rock for their thirst, and told them to go in to possess the land which you had sworn to give them. But they and our fathers acted proudly, hardened their necks, and did not heed your commands. They refused to obey, and they were not mindful of your wonders that you did among them. But they hardened their necks, and in their rebellion they appointed a leader to return to their bondage. But you are God, ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abundant in kindness, and did not forsake them. Jesus Christ was the epitome of kindness. Remember the pity that he took on Lazarus' family when he learned of Lazarus' death. And how about the kindness that he showed to Jairus, whose daughter had died, and to the many others whom he healed or helped, to whom he cast out devils. He was kind continuously. And remember his instructions to his disciples to suffer the little children to come unto me. Little children won't come unto you unless you're kind to them. That's our example. That's who we're to pattern our life after. And to do that, we must show true kindness. Someone once said that the distinction of a real man is that he's kind. The next point of the Scout Law is obedient. A scout is obedient. He obeys his parents, scoutmaster, patrol leader, and all other duly constituted authorities. The success of the Boy Scout movement in this country lies in the fact that boys were obedient. They were taught obedience as scouts, and this teaching carried over later in life where they obeyed the law of the land. As a matter of fact, throughout the first 100 years of the history of Boy Scouts, virtually no Eagle Scout had ever been convicted of a felony. That didn't just happen. We find the ultimate example of obedience in the Bible when Abraham showed that he was willing to obey God even to the point of killing his only son, we've already talked about. And there are good examples of obedience brings to mind that of a young soldier who was, during World War II, he was placed on duty as a guard at a gate. His job was to check the ID, the identification papers of anybody who came through that gate. He wasn't to let anybody through the gate until they stopped and showed their ID. Well, shortly after, they left him alone and drove a vehicle with a little tag on front with two little stars on it. Some of you know what that means, a general. And the young soldier put up his hand and said, "Halt!" Even though he saw the stars, the driver stopped the vehicle and they rolled down the window, and the general said, "What's going on? Why are you stopping me?" And the young fellow replied, "It's my job to stop. I have to check everybody's ID." He said, "I'm General so-and-so, and I don't have to show my ID. Go ahead, driver." And the young man said, "Sir, excuse me a second. I'm new at this. Do I shoot the driver or you?" That's obedience. He was doing what he was told to do. Confederate General Thomas J. Jackson said, "Through life, let your principal object be the discharge of duty." That's another phrase for be obedient. That's a pretty good slogan for a Christian soldier as well, don't you think? I think it's very interesting how that Thomas J. Jackson came to be known as Stonewall Jackson. It was at the First Battle of Bull Run in July of 1861, otherwise known as the First Battle of Manassas, that Jackson earned his famous nickname Stonewall. When Jackson charged his army ahead to bridge a gap in the defensive line against a Union attack, General Bernard B. was so impressed, he shouted to his men, "There is Jackson standing like a stone wall, rally behind the Virginian." And afterward, the nickname stuck, and Jackson was promoted to Major General for the courage and quick thinking on the battlefield. Certainly, he instilled obedience in his soldiers. We, of all people, know the importance of obedience. It is the key to fulfilling our very purpose in life. The next point is cheerful. A scout is cheerful. He smiles whenever he can. His obedience to orders is prompt and cheery. Don't hear that word very often. Maybe it's because not too many people are cheery these days. But a scout is cheerful. He never shirks nor grumbles at hardships. Could that be said about us, that we never grumble or shirk at hardships? Are we truly cheerful? I've always enjoyed good cheer in scouts. On the first 5 camping trips with that troop I mentioned from Atlanta, it rained. One of those rains was, in my definition, a flood. It was quite an experience. Don't have time now to go into the details of it, but some of you want to hear an interesting story sometime. I can tell you about the time it really rained on a camp out over there in Georgia. So in the first 5 trips, we had rain. On the canoe trip, several canoes were swamped, including the scoutmasters. But one thing we did not have was a bad attitude. The kids were literally cheerful. Scouts have always been singers, cheerful singers. They sing while they hike. They sing around the campfire, where they also tell jokes and perform stunts. Scouting was a lot of fun. And one of the real blessings of being around Boy Scouts is they're cheerful. Believe it or not, we have a scripture that commands us to be cheerful. Romans 12:8. Let's take a look at that one as well. Romans 12, beginning in verse 6. "Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Our ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches in teaching. He who exhorts in exhortation. He who gives with liberality. He who leads with diligence. He who shows mercy with cheerfulness." In 2 Corinthians 9:7, we are instructed to be cheerful givers. And Proverbs 15:13 tells us a merry heart makes a cheerful countenance. Sure, we've got our troubles, but we know why we have them, don't we? We know where we are going, and we know what our great reward is going to be. We, of all people, ought to be cheerful. The next point is thrifty. A scout is thrifty. He does not wantonly destroy property. He works faithfully, wastes nothing, and makes the best use of his opportunities. He saves his money so that he may pay his own way. Be generous to those in need and helpful to worthy objects. He may work for pay, but must not receive tips for courtesies as good turns. Scouts are taught principles of good money management, and it goes without saying how valuable, of course, that can be in later life. The church teaches those principles too. The details are found in our booklet on personal finances. Greed, lust for things, and wasting money are the antithesis of being thrifty. Let's look at Luke 12 and verse 15. Christ says, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Point number 10 is brave. A scout is brave. He has the courage to face danger in spite of fear and to stand up for the right against the coaxing of friends or the jeers or threats of enemies, and defeat does not down him. Doesn't that sound like it'd be a pretty good description of our calling as well? The Bible is filled with numerous examples of bravery, and we won't go through all of them, but I'll just mention, for example, the situation with Nathan and David, and Christ with Satan, how bravely he stood up to him. And Christ also in the temple, he was brave enough to go in and break up the money business that was going there, very contrary to the way things should have been. And remember also, he was brave enough to call the prominent leaders of that time snakes. Christ was brave. And what about the early Christians? Remember how brave they were? They were thrown into situations with lions, and they were brave enough to endure that. Thankfully, we don't have to prove our bravery by facing a bunch of ravenous lions. For us, courage is to stand up for what is right, to take it when we're ridiculed for what we believe. Bravery is displayed by our young people who choose not to participate in a state track meet or a championship basketball game because it falls on the Sabbath. That takes bravery. Courage for us is men and women putting their jobs on the line in order to keep the Sabbath or attend the feast. And many of God's people have shown that bravery. It does take courage to live the kind of life that God requires. And those who are brave enough to endure that to the end will be rewarded for doing so. Point number 11 is clean. A scout is clean. He keeps clean in body and thoughts, stands for clean speech, clean sport, clean habits, and travels with a clean crowd. Can't do much better than that. Notice that the emphasis on this particular point is not so much cleanliness of body, although that's important, but more on what might be called clean living. Remember, David prayed, "Create in me a clean heart, O God." And Paul admonished us to think on things that are pure and lovely and of good report. Clean things, in other words. Some boys come into scouts from backgrounds where the language leaves a lot to be desired, and this often has to be dealt with. In scouts, some of them literally learn to clean that problem up. I found it interesting to learn how George Washington felt about filthy language. But listen to what he says. He thought filthy language was detestable. In July 1776, he issued a general order in which he described it as foolish and wicked, a vice so mean and low without any temptation that every man of sense and character detests and despises it. He called upon the officers to check it by example as well as by influence. So certainly he had some strong feelings about being clean in speech anyhow. We owe it to our children and our grandchildren to help them develop a habit of clean thinking and speaking by instruction as well as example. And finally, point 12. A scout is reverent. He is reverent toward God. He is faithful in his religious duties and respects the convictions of others in matters of custom and religion. This point was not in the original British Boy Scout law, But one of the early founders of the scouting movement, a gentleman named James E. West, insisted that it be a part of the Boy Scouts of America law. In his opinion, no boy could grow into a true man and a true American citizen without a deep religious conviction. Imagine if he said that today. That part about respecting the convictions of others in matter of religion meant a lot to me. Remember our experience at the summer camp where we were shown respect for our religion. I also experienced that at the National Camping School when I let them know that I had to observe the Sabbath from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. They literally changed the time of some meetings that were scheduled during that time to earlier or later so that I would not have to miss them. I found that very impressive. It sounded just like scouts to me, respecting someone's religious conviction. You know, it seems more than just coincidental that the final point of the scout law has to do with one's relationship to God. Just like the final law of the seven laws of success that Mr. Armstrong taught us, the final law deals with a right relationship with God and with the boys. Although some of the instruction may be somewhat misguided, boys are taught to trust, or at least were taught to trust in God and to develop a meaningful relationship with Him as they understand Him to be. And this is good. And such guidance has great value in the moral development of a boy. And I truly believe that the influence for the good by that practice of this point, being reverent, has been of great significance, as I said earlier, in the development of our country. In the developing years of this nation, through the peak of our pride and our power, about World War II and on up through the 50s, for the most part, the lives of the people in this country were pretty much based on these kinds of high ideals. But that standard has gradually slipped away, as you're well aware. Our values as a nation and for many individuals have slowly deteriorated. Even in scouting, unfortunately, the standards have been weakened over the years. And that's why I chose to read this description of these laws from a Boy Scout handbook that's 70 years old. It would not read the same today. Now, it seems most people practice situation ethics, where each person determines for himself what is right and what is wrong. Some even go so far as to admit that certain practices are called abominable in the Bible, that we cannot condemn them now because that was in olden times. And what was right and what was wrong back then is not necessarily right or wrong today. We're not expected to have the same standards that we find in the Bible. But I also find in the Bible that God changes not. So that doesn't make much sense, doesn't carry much weight. I don't think, considering the degree of immorality that we've stooped to in this country and the things that we already condone, I just don't think our minds can even conceive of the depth of depravity that's going to be upon us sooner than we realize. If you think it can't get worse, remember the description of what happened in Sodom. It can, and we're promised that it will. Because of this decline in thinking and morality and standing on principles of right and good, our nation is lost its positive influence in the world. Most of us are old enough to remember when the whole world looked up to the United States of America. And most of us are well aware that right now that's simply not the case. There seems to be little hope, although we see some efforts being made finally, but there's little hope that we're ever going to, as a nation, get back on track. But are we surprised? We should not be. Isn't this what we've been expecting? Isn't this what we've been told is going to come about? And aren't we also told it's going to get worse? A Boy Scout has to promise to obey the Scout law, to understand and live up to the 12 points of the law. This is required for him for each rank that he advances through from the time he begins as a tenderfoot up through ranks to the top level, which is called an Eagle Scout. Nowadays, only a small minority of boys even are involved in scouting. And of those relatively few who are, only a little over 1 in 100 make it to Eagle Scout. But some do. And let me in closing give you an example of one of my former scouts who did. And I will gladly use his name. I'm not ashamed to at all, or not hesitant to by any means. His name was Billy Bryant. He was a young fella in our scout troop there in Atlanta. Billy so exemplified these characteristics that I've been talking about today that folks noticed. One of his teachers simply could not believe what she saw. And she talked to him and asked why he was so different from the average guys and gals around him. And he explained that it was his church. Well, she wanted to meet his parent, and that was arranged. And they had a nice long talk. And to make a long story short, within a few weeks, she and her husband were baptized into God's church. Purely as a result, well, of course, God was calling them, obviously, but purely as a result of the example that Billy showed to her of a right way of life. That was very rewarding to me. Billy was the second member of that little group that made Eagle Scout out of about maybe 15 boys that wound up starting in that troop. And thankfully, two or three more did after that, a couple of them after I had moved to this area and was no longer involved. But some of the fellows dropped out of the troop. They dropped out of scouting. They dropped out of the church. And frankly, some of them I haven't heard from since. And that is sad indeed. Unfortunately, it's going to be the same way with some of us. We're going to, some of us, most hopefully, will hang in there and live up to these ideals, the ideals that qualify us to make it into God's kingdom, and some will not. Some will not persevere, although they have for years. It'll just get too tough. It'll get more than they can handle and give up and lose out and miss the greatest opportunity a loving God could conceive for mankind. But for those who do hang on, they'll have a fantastic opportunity in God's government to help teach these principles of living that will result in happy, joyful, worthwhile lives. Personally, I've been so blessed to know and to some extent share the principles found in the Boy Scout law for over 65 years. And I hope and plan to do so for at least another 1,000. It's truly wonderful. The history of the success of the Boy Scout movement for its first 100 years proved conclusively that to live a successful, joyful, godly life, a person must be trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, obedient, kind, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent.